Tech Talk, Pippa's Planet.
Something a little different today. You know, my late grandfather was never happier than when he was standing on a rock with a fishing rod in his hand and some wild piece of Eastern Cape coastline in front of him. And as a result, I grew up on stories about fish, the big fish, the small ones, the ones that got away, the ones he caught. But more memorable than any of them and any of Gramps' own catches was the story he told me when I was very young of a very strange and very special fish that was caught not very far away from our hometown of East London at the mouth of the Chelumna River in 1938. And it was a fish that everyone thought had been extinct for millions of years. It was previously only known through fossil remains. But it was a fish that helped put South African science on the map. It made a household name of one Professor J.L.B. Smith. It was, of course, the coelacanth, nicknamed Old Forelegs for its very distinctive fins. And one of my earliest childhood memories is of going to see that specimen preserved at the East London Museum. No doubt my guest in studio today did the same on many occasions because his own story is interwoven with those of J.L.B. and Margaret Smith and with the museum curator Marjorie Courtney Latimer, who also plays a key role in this story. It's a great pleasure to welcome back to our studio Professor Mike Bruton, who's an ichthyologist and museum specialist, who's recently brought J.L.B. Smith's own book, Old Forelegs, back to life with a new annotated edition updating the story of the fish. Mike, it's lovely to have you with us again. Welcome back.
Thank you, Pippa. Great to chat to you again.
For me, possibly the most extraordinary thing about this story, I mean, the name J.L.B. Smith is forever linked to the name of the coelacanth, but he wasn't, in fact, a professional ichthyologist. He was a chemist.
Right. He was trained as an organic chemist, and he practiced as a chemist actually longer than as an ichthyologist. But he was encouraged by his doctors to do outdoor pursuits, and being a keen angler, he concentrated on angling. And with his analytical mind, he was frustrated that he couldn't identify the fishes he caught, so he started developing identification keys, publishing them, and that led to a parallel career in ichthyology. So when the coelacanth was discovered, he was the only ichthyologist in the Eastern Cape, so Marjorie Courtney Latimer referred to him.
It's a fascinating story. So a trawler finds this strange-looking fish, thankfully doesn't just chuck it over the side or put it in a bin to take somewhere else, phones the East London Museum curator Marjorie Courtney Latimer to say, we found something fishy, if you'll pardon the pun. a lot of the story hinges upon her response to that call, because this could so easily have just gone away with somebody going, oh, haven't got time to go there, sorry.
Absolutely. And Hendrik Hursen had already completed his commercial trawling, and he decided to shoot one more trawl off the Chelumna River to catch fish for the museum and the aquarium. And he caught a coelacanth in very shallow water relative to the depths we've subsequently caught them or seen them. Mm-hmm. So that was unusual. Then for her to go down to the harbour 3 days before Christmas, when she was very busy on other things, was also a remarkable thing. And then to find the fish and recognise it without having much knowledge of fishes, that it was something different, something worth keeping, and referring it to Smith's.
Now, Smith obviously must have got very excited when he got that first sketch from Marjorie Courtney Latimer saying, this is what we found. I mean, I've said the significance is the fact that everyone thought this fish had been gone for millions of years. Talk to us about just how significant that find was.
Well, of course, that little sketch of Marjorie's has become one of the iconic sketches in the history of zoology. And her natural history instincts allowed her to identify the diagnostic characters of the fish. And he had a knowledge of fossil fishes, even though he was an angler and a live fish man, and immediately put two and two together. And the significance, as you say, is that the fish was thought to have gone extinct with the dinosaurs about 65 million years ago. And to catch a living one provides an invaluable and unique window into the past. Because, of course, what is not preserved in the fossil record is the soft anatomy, the behavior, the physiology, and so on. And suddenly we could study this in an ancient group of fishes, and a group of fishes which apparently hasn't changed very much over time.
So it was 1938 that first one turned up near East London. It would be several years, more than a decade, before the next one was found. That was in the Comores, if I'm not mistaken.
In 1952, yes.
Okay. Since then, I mean, obviously, it's the stuff of legend. It's a story that certainly anybody from the Eastern Cape has grown up on. But it had a much broader impact beyond just what this fish meant and this weird and wonderful thing of finding a fish from the days of the dinosaurs still living on the planet. It's had a much broader significance for how the world saw South Africa and South African science.
Well, J.W. Smith's description of the first and second coelacanth attracted international attention, not only among scientists, but among the media. It was described as, you know, one of the great scientific discoveries of the 20th century. And his subsequent work, and especially his publication of the book Old Forelegs, A Story of the Coelacanth, took science all over the world. It was one of the first science, popular science bestsellers ever. Mm. The print run was over 600,000 in 5 English editions and 9 foreign language editions. And it really put South Africa on the world map, as you said. And for the very first time, it took science and the way in which a scientist thinks and discovers things into the homes of everyday people. A few scientists 60 years ago had done that. Mm. Maybe Eugene Marais and Sidney Scaife in South Africa and a few abroad. But for the first time, people gained an insight into how scientists think and how science works. And of course, the coelacanth has continued to provide surprises. Its genome has recently been deciphered, and that's provided new insights into that extremely important evolutionary step when animals left the comfort of the water and came onto the harsh environment of the land. Mm.
As you say, new discoveries. I mean, just as recently as 2015, there was the huge discovery near Grahamstown of while roadworks were being carried out, all these new coelacanth fossils.
Correct. Rob Guest discovered a fossil of a small estuarine coelacanth, in fact, juvenile examples. He's called it Serenichthys cowiensis. And this is one of several different extinct coelacanth species that have been found in South Africa.
Now, I'd like to pause here and bring your own story in parallel here, because the story of how you came personally to update J.L.B. Smith's is quite interesting. I know you studied under the Smiths. It is remarkable. Don't forget, I think it's worth mentioning and pointing to the fact that this was a husband and wife team who both had a great role to play in the story of the coelacanth and the work of developing ichthyology in this country. You studied under them. In fact, you took over from Margaret Smith as director of the J.L.B. Smith Institute in Grahamstown. Where did your own fascination with the coelacanth and with fish in general start?
Well, it started very early, like as with you. Mm-hmm. According to my parents, I first met the coelacanth in the East London Museum when I was perhaps 8 to 10 years old. At the time, I regularly went fishing with my uncles in the Nahoon River, catching mm-hmm. cob and spotted grunter. And I became fascinated with fishes very early on. I made my own goggles and snorkel and used to dive in the pools at Mermaid's Pool near Nahoon. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to Rhodes, my interest was in fishes, but also in reptiles and amphibians and insects. I had broad-ranging interests. But I was given the opportunity to study fishes for my postgraduate degrees at Lake Sabaya in Zululand. And initially, I concentrated on freshwater fishes. But the coelacanth was always there in the background. And eventually, it became a dominating feature of my career.
Okay. So, okay, we'll pause the story there because we've got a caller on the line with a comment or a question that I'd like to hear. Anyone is welcome to call in, ask a question, share your own perspective, your own memories of the story if you have them. Terence in Sunningdale, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks, and yourself, Terence?
All right. Well, I called him Grandpa Joe. He called a coelacanth.
He called it a coelacanth?
A coelacanth.
Coelacanth.
Okay, well, it might be pronounced that way if you were reading it phonetically, but coelacanth is the correct pronunciation. Terence, you say he caught one, or
he
called it
one.
That. He caught one where?
He caught it more or less. Where did Grandpa Joe catch it? In Warner Beach.
No.
Warner Beach.
In the Durban.
Warner Beach, so it's near Durban.
Okay. I mean, Mike, how common is that? I don't know how many of them have been found since. I mean, we've mentioned the first two rediscoveries. Are they caught more regularly these days?
As far as we know, no angler has ever caught a coelacanth. They've all been caught by traditional fishermen off the Comores, Madagascar, mm-hmm. Tanzania, and most recently by seine nets. There is an example, one case of a Mr. Cartwright, originally from Zimbabwe, mm-hmm. who saw one in shallow water off Mozambique, but he didn't catch it. And I have no record of a definite capture by an angler of a coelacanth.
Okay, Terence, it might be one of those family legends that's grown a little bit over the Christmas chin, perhaps. I'm not sure. You know what fishermen are like. The catch is always a little bit bigger each year they tell the story. Interesting to get an SMS from Susie, who says, my late father was a scientist and a fisherman, and was fascinated by the coelacanth. We spent many, many days in the home of Professor J.L.B. Smith and his wife Margaret in Hout Bay, studying insects and catching bugs and looking at fossils. We have all of the prof's books proudly displayed here, including all of his research. That is a fascinating piece of family history that you're so lucky to have to share, Susie. Thanks for the feedback.
It's amazing. Wherever I travel, sitting in aeroplanes, attending events, it's so many people have an anecdote around the coelacanth. It's amazing the extent to which it's affected people's lives.
One not particularly attractive fish, it has to be said. Now, Yaron, let me bring you back into this, because I'm interested to know how you came to tackle the project of updating Old Four Legs, the book, and producing this wonderful new book, The Annotated Old Four Legs, The Updated Story of the Coelacanth. Because, of course, the prof and his wife are long gone. Their family aren't even in South Africa any longer, as far as I know. How did you actually get permission to do this?
Well, 2018 is the 80th anniversary of the capture of the first coelacanth. It's also the 50th anniversary of J.L.B. Smith's death and the establishment of the institute in his name. And I felt it was appropriate that during this year we should commemorate those events by republishing Old Four Legs, because all of the English and foreign language editions are now out of print. And it's a story that I believe should be kept alive to inspire new generations of people, not only in South Africa but also abroad. So what I did is got permission from Longman Greens and Company through my publisher, Strake Nature, to republish the original book. So the inside columns of the new book, the whole original book is published, and then we've added annotations in the margins. And in addition, I've written an introductory chapter which introduces J.L.B. Smith and discusses a book about the book. And then at the end, I talk about the significance of the coelacanth, and especially make the point that one of the reasons why so many people know about it is because the coelacanth not only has a rich natural history, it also has a fascinating cultural history, the way in which it's interacted with humans. And we've managed to get permission to print examples of artworks, of craftworks, of sculptures, stamps, money, many different things that depict the coelacanth.
It's a fascinating read. I mean, I've just absolutely pored over it. The really interesting part to read for me was near the beginning. There is an introduction by William Smith, the son of J.L.B. and Margaret Smith, who many of our listeners will remember from his days as the star science teacher and maths teacher on TV, who in his own right did amazing work. But it's so interesting to read his story of growing up as the son of J.L.B. Smith and look at a character who, to us as members of the public, was such a confident and competent, on top of his own game, person. And to see in him the boy who always felt somewhat in the shadow of this famous and brilliantly intelligent father who always did everything better and I gather was quite competitive. How did he respond? Did you have personal contact with him when you reached out for the introduction to say, this is what I want to do?
Well, as you say, William had a stellar career of his own, but he was very careful to choose a career where he wouldn't compete with his father, and in fact chose a field in which his father had very little interest. But William and Jenny, who now live in Perth, were extremely supportive of this project right from the outset. They encouraged me to go ahead. He willingly wrote a very interesting and witty introduction, and they answered many, many queries over the years in which I was producing this book. So thanks to them.
He almost had this fish as a sibling, didn't he? Because he was literally a babe in arms when the original book came out.
Right. He was born about 4 months after four days after the description of the first coelacanth went to publication. So the Smiths were actually giving priority to the fish at the time. And when he was born, he didn't even have booties. He didn't even have baby's clothes. They weren't really ready for him. But he participated as a schoolboy in many of their expeditions to East Africa, mainly in northern Mozambique, became a very skilled fish catcher and diver. So during that part of his career, he was very involved with them, but subsequently broke out and achieved international acclaim for his science teaching.
Okay. My guest in studio, just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, is Professor Mike Bruton, who is himself an ichthyologist, a museum specialist, and has his own story very closely linked with the story of the Smiths and of the coelacanth. His new book is called The Annotated Old Four Legs, The Updated Story of the Coelacanth, and it is in bookstores now, retailing at around about 300 rand a copy, published by Strake Nature. Having just got this one to press, you've in fact got another one coming out as a companion piece, I think, later this year.
Correct. While I was doing research for the annotated Old Forelegs, I dug out so much new information about JLB and Margaret Smith, which I couldn't include in this book. So I decided to write a joint biography of these two famous scientists whose partnership really made it all possible. So it's called The Fishy Smiths. Mm. It'll come out in about September, also through Straight Nature. And it's, I think, a very intimate portrait of the lives of two great South Africans, two very colorful people, and includes a great deal of unpublished information. And I've written it from the perspective of a scientist, sort of evidence-based research. So I did a questionnaire circular. I interviewed a lot of people. I corresponded with a lot of people. And in many cases, I've reprinted their responses exactly as they provided them to me. And it creates a fascinating story.
I can't wait to read it. I really can't. I'm particularly interested in the story of Margaret Smith, because particularly for the time that they were working in, for a woman to have such a prominent role in a field of science which must have been male-dominated is fascinating.
But what is interesting is that many people don't know that Margaret was JLB's second wife. And I talk about Henriette Pienaar, who was his first wife for 16 years, and the impact that she had on his career as well.
Okay. We've got an intriguing-sounding question on the line. Derek in Copenhagen, it says on my firstly, welcome from Copenhagen. Lovely to have you with us. But it says here that you caught a fish with legs. Tell us more.
Yeah. Basically, Pippa, look, I grew up in Eastern Cape as well. And my first fish with legs that I found was with my brother after a spring high tide at Kasuka in the between Port Alfred and Kenton. And we didn't really know what to do with it. It looked a bit smelly, but it was like a greenish, grey-green fish. And the front fins, the small little front fins, had legs like a frog, and then it also had legs on the back fins. But it clearly wasn't the kind of fish that could walk on the land. But maybe if it got washed up, it could crawl a little bit, you know. And we didn't really know what to do with it, so we were quite young, and we basically buried it, and then we put a flag up, and we went to call our parents, but we couldn't find it when we got back. So that was the one thing. And then about 4 years ago, in Tethys Bay, I was diving around in the reserve, in the nature reserve, and wasn't very deep, about knee deep, and I saw a fish crawling on the rock. It was on the rock, and it wasn't a lizard, and it was crawling on the rock, and then it went back into the water when it saw me. And I've been wondering what kind of fish it is for so many years, and it's always difficult to get people to believe me when I tell about this fish. And it was in the middle of the day, and it looked like a little bit like a reptile, but it was definitely a fish. It had a fish's tail, and I was wondering if it wasn't a salamander, but it was salt water, and it crawled back into the water, and I never saw it again. I went onto the books and I tried to find it, and I thought maybe it could be a coelurincus.
Well, Mike's eyebrows are going in all directions. Mike, what do you make of that story?
Well, firstly, there are 33,000 species of fishes and counting. Fishes have done just about everything that any animal, vertebrate or invertebrate, has done. And there are many fishes whose fins are modified for waddling around on the bottom, especially bottom feeders and fishes that live in intertidal pools. And I think the fish you're describing is probably one of the blennies. Many of them have the front fins, the pectoral fins, modified as kind of legs, and can shuffle around. But there are many, many families of fishes that include species with fins strong enough to waddle. And probably the most famous are the mudskippers, which can come right out of the water, even climb up mangrove stalks. And then, of course, the lungfishes, which have filament-like fins, which are not strong enough to walk on, but have lungs and can survive in desiccated cocoons. Of course, the coelacanth, nicknamed Old Forelegs, it's a misnomer, because we know now that the modern species didn't ever walk on those fins. The body shape is just completely wrong.
Okay.
And in fact, the living coelacanth doesn't touch the bottom. It hovers in midwater. Occasionally does headstands and upside down, but it doesn't walk.
Fascinating call, Derek. Thank you. And if I may ask you just to stay a few extra minutes, Mike, I want to ask you about the living coelacanth.
Cape Talk, Pippa's Planet.
I'm going to steal just a few more minutes to wrap up the conversation around the coelacanth, because it is extraordinary. I'm getting SMSs, Mike, and WhatsApps from people saying, I'm loving listening to the story. I remember hearing the story as a child. Here is a WhatsApp from Fiona in McGregor saying, thank you for this. I'm so glad Old Four Legs has been updated. She says, I wasn't fortunate enough to meet JLB, but I grew up with Margaret, who we knew as Fishy. And she told my sister and I the story of the coelacanth in the early days of ichthyology at Rhodes, even before the institute was built. Fiona, thanks for sharing those memories with us. The million-dollar word someone uttered just before we went to the news was living coelacanth. And let's not forget, this is not a once-off discovery we're talking about. There are now known living coelacanths, and you've had the privilege, Mike, of actually seeing them in their natural habitat.
Correct. It was really the highlight of my whole ichthyology career. In November 2008, Hans Fricker invited me to join him on his very last dives with the Jago submersible, which is a research submersible that can go down to 400 meters and which he's used over 25 years to study coelacanths. So I went up there, and Jürgen Chawa, the pilot, took me down to a special cave on the south shore of Grand Comore near Singani. And there at 198 meters, we crept into the cave and we spent about 5 hours with some coelacanths there. Oh. And it was an unforgettable experience. It was like traveling back hundreds of millions of years and seeing what life was like long before humans arrived. And they're such docile and tranquil animals. They gradually emerge from the depths of the cave, hovering, all very gentle, eyeing us, but not really frightened. And it was a stunning experience. I will never forget it.
That's goosebump stuff. Just in closing, a WhatsApp asking, are there any sea creatures besides the coelacanth, which we thought were extinct but are not? I guess the bigger question is, it opens the wonder of what else might still be out there that we just haven't found yet.
Yeah, if a fish that reaches 100 kilograms and 2 meters and lives in relatively shallow water, you know, hadn't been discovered until 80 years ago, there must be lots of other things down there. And one example is a megamouth shark. And this shark, it reaches 15 meters. It was first discovered in 1975, and just a few hundred specimens have been seen or caught since then. So there are undoubtedly creatures out there in the ocean, and we really need to spend more time and money exploring our ocean. A statistic I found amazing is that 3 times more people have been to the moon than to the deepest part of the ocean. Hmm. We really are neglecting our ocean.
It's been a fascinating conversation, and it's a wonderful book. Please look for the annotated Old Four Legs, the updated story of the coelacanth, published by Straight Nature and in stores now. I, for one, will look forward to the biography to go with it later this year. Professor Mike Bruton, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Pippa. It's a great pleasure.